Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Hello, and welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing. It's October the 12th, 2021. I'm Raoul Woodliffe, and I'm joined today by US correspondent Jacob Magid and breaking news editor Manny Fabian, who's currently covering the military beat. Before we get started, I'd just like to let you all know about Streetwise Hebrew for the TOI community, bite-sized audio Hebrew classes that we think you'll really enjoy. More about that at the end of today's podcast. On today's show, we'll start with an update on recent violence at Damascus Gate and near the West Bank settlement of Yitzhar. We'll hear from Jacob about his recent interview with the Palestinian Authority's ambassador to the UN, Riyad Mansour, and how the Palestinians are trying to engage with the US. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid lands today in the US. We'll look at what's in store on his trip. And to finish the show, we'll hear about the tanks of the future being developed in Israel. Okay, Manny, starting with you. Last night, there were clashes at the Damascus Gate for a third consecutive night. The site has been a flashpoint for previous violence. Tell us what's been happening over the last few nights.
So during the last few nights, there's been clashes between Palestinians and Israeli police at Damascus Gate in Jerusalem. And it is apparently over groundwork that has been conducted just in the area near the old city, where there apparently is an old Muslim cemetery there. Now, Palestinians claim that they've been digging up the graves, and that is something very sensitive for them. But the Israeli National Nature and Parks Authority is countering that, and they are saying that the human remains that were discovered were outside a cemetery and not where they're developing the public land. So there's been violence stemming from that. So Palestinians have allegedly been throwing stones at people passing by, and police have been responding with stun grenades and skunk water.
And tell me, could this escalate into something beyond just this isolated site?
Definitely in the past, we've seen that Damascus Gate became this sort of hotspot for violence that ignited further in the region, like in May, where it was a regular spot for clashes between Palestinians and security forces and Israelis, and far-right nationalists held marches there, which caused more escalation on the other side. And that eventually led, among other things, but it led to the recent conflict with Gaza. So now that this is going on for 3 days, there is a chance this could ignite further, but for now it seems to be localized within the Damascus Gate area.
Now, turning to the West Bank, we've seen violence from settlers towards border guards near the Yitzhar settlement. Manny, tell us what's been taking place.
So just for a bit of context, Yitzhar is a settlement in the northern West Bank, and next to it is a closed military zone. And this zone has been closed off because groups of young settlers have been trying to sort of set up camps and set up outposts in this area, which is illegal to set up. So they closed off the area. Now, last night, border police troops went into this area to dismantle some sort of tent that was set up. And when they went in there, groups hurled stones towards them and buckets of paint. And as a result, one of the troops was lightly hurt. Some glass shrapnel hit him, and he was taken for examination. And then when they were driving on their way out, they found some sort of metal rods on the road, which the police say were used in a way to sabotage police vehicles. Now, Yitzhar and the surrounding area has been very frequent site of clashes between settlers and Israeli troops, usually over the fact of these illegal outposts that have been set up. And last night's incident was condemned by the Israel Defense Forces Chief of Staff, Aviv Kohavi, and also from the Public Security Minister, Omer Bar-Lev, and they've both condemned it. However, no arrests have been made yet.
It seems like quite a high-level condemnation, both the Chief of Staff and the Public Security Minister. Is there a specific effort to appear to be condemning these sort of acts and acting against them?
I think it could be possibly seen as maybe a slight change in policy to previously, since over the years there's been many attacks by extremist settlers against Palestinians and against Israeli security forces, and they are rarely arrested or rarely tried. So there's a possibility here that with this new government, and Omer Bar-Lev is the new public security minister, maybe it's time to set a new policy that settler extremists that are committing violence against security forces and against Palestinians would be arrested and tried and see the full extent of the law.
This Times of Israel podcast is brought to you by Koren Publishers Jerusalem. Whether you're looking to enrich your mind or your soul, Koren Publishers has it all. From Israeli history to the works of Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Steinsaltz, and other contemporary thinkers, including the brand new Magamon edition Koren Tanakh, with translation by Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, Jessica Sacks, and many others. Times of Israel listeners can get 10% off your entire order. Just go to korenpub.com and use the code TOIPOD, that's KORENPUB.com, and enter the code TOIPOD for your 10% discount. Jacob, turning to you, you recently interviewed the Palestinian Authority ambassador to the UN, Riyad Mansour, in an interview that will be published on the site shortly. Tell us what came out from that discussion.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting conversation I had with him at a cafe outside the UN a couple weeks ago. And he's actually the most senior Palestinian official on U.S. soil after the Trump administration shuttered the PLO's mission in Washington in 2018. And he described this new dilemma that the Palestinian Authority is facing with the Biden administration, which on the one hand has renewed relations with Ramallah and has restored hundreds of millions of dollars in aid that is definitely quite needed right now as the PA is in dire financial strait. But on the other hand, is the Biden administration has been adopting a key Israeli talking point about the conflict, describing it as unsolvable for the foreseeable future. So he expressed appreciation for the steps taken by the Biden administration thus far, particularly given that their priorities are clearly elsewhere. I mean, they talk about climate change and domestic affairs and those kinds of, and dealing with China and Russia, and really the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is nowhere near where the issues that they want to be dealing with, but yet they've kind of taken these steps. And Riyad Mansour expressed appreciation for that. On the other hand, he kind of vented a bit over the attitude in Washington, which effectively concludes that the Palestinian Authority can simply wait in the wind until grounds for negotiations for a two-state solution are more fertile, as in possibly a new Israeli prime minister who is willing to entertain that kind of option. As a result, he talked about his office pushing for the revival of the Mideast Quartet. Now, this is a long dormant body that was established in around, I think, 2002 to advance the peace process, and it includes representatives from the US, Russia, the EU, and the UN. He's been pushing this idea, or Abu Mazen and others in the PA have been pushing this proposal to revive the quartet. He's been lobbying the US and other key relevant players, and he thinks it's gaining steam. And that he notes that the Biden administration has been kind of calling, in a speech at the UN, Biden spoke about calling for collective approaches to solve world problems so that the US is not the only one kind of leading the way. And he thinks that therefore they should really welcome the quartet's involvement on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because that means that it won't just be the US trying to broker it on its own. But really I pressed him to see what the quartet's involvement would really look like, particularly given that Prime Minister Bennett opposes any negotiations with the Palestinian Authority. And he maintained that the Israeli Prime Minister might not really have a choice to say no if the quartet calls for the parties to come together and hold talks, kind of similar to Prime Minister Netanyahu before Bennett, who also kind of basically opposed the two-state solution later on in his career, but was kind of forced into these negotiations led by John Kerry in 2013, 2014, because who is he to say no to the U.S. at that point? And he hopes that kind of pressure will lead to Bennett and Israel agreeing to talks.
Jacob, would you say there's a realistic optimism that there could be some sort of talks? Because from here in Israel, it doesn't seem like there's any option.
Correct. Yeah, I kind of left the interview kind of thinking that he is not seeing, maybe in New York it's far away enough that he doesn't realize that the way the wind is blowing in Israel. I also don't think it's likely that Bennett would agree to such talks. On the other hand, I do think that that's what probably people thought about Netanyahu at the time as well. And they did find him not only agreeing to talks, but behind closed doors agreeing to quite far-reaching compromises that we would not have expected Netanyahu to agree to. So I think that's one way to give him some sort of benefit of the doubt. On the other hand, I agree. I think we're not there yet. And I think that the U.S. approach is probably more practical than the one that Ramallah sees. On the other hand, also, I don't think the PA really has the luxury of really waiting much longer for these talks to come about. Their only reason for coming about is kind of to have a two-state solution and to be able to function not only as a temporary body that they were formed to become in during Oslo, but eventually a more permanent state. So I think that he thinks, or in the PA probably thinks, that they can't wait another 2-3 years until maybe election negotiations will come about. So they're definitely pushing for options that make it make negotiations come sooner rather than later.
PA President Abu Mazen said at his UN speech that he was giving Israel a year to withdraw to the 1967 lines. Other than re-engaging the quartet, how is the Palestinian Authority, and particularly the mission to the UN, hoping to reach such a far-reaching agreement within such a short space of time?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is I think that they're setting these very strict ultimatums that clearly are unlikely to be met, particularly in the next year and a half, while Bennett is still prime minister before Lapid, who's also someone who's given certain criteria for what he's willing to negotiate on, like specifically an unwillingness to divide Jerusalem, which for the Palestinians is a non-starter. They see Jerusalem as the capital of their future state. Makes it very difficult to really see even not only the next year and a half while Bennett is prime minister, but far beyond, it will make it very difficult. I think they're at the same time, they're trying to show some flexibility with the Biden administration specifically. I think they recognize that even though that Biden, out of all Democrats, who's definitely more mainstream, isn't a person that they would love to see out of all the Democrats. I'm sure they prefer someone like Rashida Tlaib, a Palestinian American, or some folks in the Progressive Caucus that are more quote unquote pro-Palestinian. But they are trying to show flexibility to the Biden administration by working with the embassy in Jerusalem that they said before under Trump they would never work with. Abbas called it a settlement outpost. But what I reported a few days ago is that they've actually been meeting with some of the head of the mission, Michael Ratney, and the head of the Palestinian Affairs Department, George Knoll. I think showing this flexibility and meeting with the officials in Jerusalem, even though they're waiting and they're hoping that the next time that they work with officials in Jerusalem, it'll be from this consulate that Biden has pledged to reopen that Trump closed down. But in the meantime, they're taking steps to work with the Americans there. And I think it shows that not only, obviously, there's this flexibility, but I think they also don't have the luxury of kind of going to war with another U.S. administration, given their isolated international status, as they postponed another election indefinitely. And then also the crackdown of protesters that we saw earlier this summer that really garnered quite a few condemnations from across the world. So I think they realize they need the U.S. and they can't be kind of making these principled stands, even if the U.S. administration is not exactly what they would like to see.
Now, in terms of Israeli engagement with the U.S., Foreign Minister Yair Lapid is set to land in America in a number of hours. Tell us what's on the agenda for that trip.
So he will be meeting later today with a bipartisan group of lawmakers on Capitol Hill, led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And then he will meet with Vice President Kamala Harris, and that'll be the first meeting between the two since Kamala Harris became the vice president. He'll also be sitting down with a group of AIPAC lobbyists. I believe that's on Wednesday, and then we'll be closing this trip with, I think, the main event, which is a trilateral meeting between him, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and UAE Foreign Minister Abdullah bin Zayed Al Nahyan. And that event will include some sort of press conference where they will get a chance to give some remarks to the media, as opposed to the other events, which will be mainly closed to the press. And Lapid has kind of said the main goal of the trip is to discuss Israeli concerns regarding Iran's nuclear program, and the issue will undoubtedly be discussed. But the sides know where each other stands, I think. The U.S. still hasn't exhausted its efforts to rejoin the JCPOA, the Iran Nuclear Accord, and Israel has made clear that it opposes these efforts. So I think Lapid will surely raise his concerns regarding the JCPOA, but Blinken and Harris and Democratic lawmakers will probably be more interested in raising the Palestinian issue and press Lapid on terms of new initiatives that the government is prepared to advance to improve the lives of Palestinians. And I think that the PA recently, I think it was yesterday, announced that Israel had approved the residency of 442 undocumented Palestinians in the West Bank. This is because the PA can't even really issue its own valid identity cards without coordinating with Israel, which controls the borders of the West Bank. But we're talking about 442, and Gantz, after meeting with President Abbas, talked about thousands. So this is much less than what was expected, and I think not enough for what it's a welcome step as far as the U.S. and Palestinians are concerned, but not nearly enough compared to what they're expecting. And I think, if going back to this visit by Lapid, one of the goals is to improve relations with Democrats and maintain bipartisan support. And the way to do that, I think, is going to be to show that Israel's taking gestures toward the Palestinians. So I think they're going to expecting more in terms of this. Both sides will want to be kind of showing this goal of improving relations with both parties, with both Democrats and Republicans. And I think we'll see Lapid really warmly embrace Republicans, Democrats, and showing that how his new government is able to handle relations with Democrats specifically better than Netanyahu could. And then in the meeting with Blinken, I think the goal for the U.S. really is to kind of show that they're also, it's not just a Trump initiative to advance the Abraham Accords, but also the Biden administration is interested in doing so as well. Even if they're not able to kind of bring new countries into the mix, they are able to strengthen the existing relatively new relations that have been formed between Israel and the UAE. And this is an opportunity for them to take credit for the deepening of those ties that they're facilitating.
Now, Manny, turning back to you, you wrote a short but fascinating piece recently about the defense ministry selecting the Israel aerospace industries to lead the development of Israel's tanks of the future. Tell us, what are the tanks of the future?
So don't let the name confuse you with Israel aerospace industries. The tanks aren't going to be flying. But the company was chosen out of three different defense contractors. And they were given a couple of years to build all sorts of different technologies to adapt both the current tanks that Israel has and armored vehicles and the future ones that will be created. So they were given some time to come up with something technologically advanced for these tanks of the future. And they were selected to continue the development. And eventually, all the current tanks and all the future tanks will have these, they say, advanced autonomous systems and automatic systems to function as sort of an extra soldier inside the vehicle to carry out tasks by itself using artificial intelligence.
And when would that be expected?
The Carmel program began about 5 years ago, and it was initially aimed at making a new tank, which sort of happened. There is a new tank which is due to enter service in the coming years, but now it's including integrating these systems in older tanks. So I assume within the next few years we'll see some of these systems being implemented in tanks, sort of incrementally, not all at once, but small systems bit by bit will be put into tanks and armored vehicles.
Okay, so that's all we've got time for on today's Daily Briefing. I want to thank you both, Jacob Magid and Manny Fabian.
Thanks.
Thanks, Raul.
To access Streetwise Hebrew, bite-sized audio Hebrew classes, join the TOI community by signing up on the Times of Israel website. Jessica Steinberg will be back tomorrow with more of what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, on thetimesofisrael.com.